Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Wednesday, June 12th. Currently 64 degrees in Park City, 65 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. Good morning, Wasatch back. We've got beautiful skies in store for today as far as lots of clear conditions out there. Temperatures still above average by a good 10 degrees or more. In fact, climbing to 87 today in Park City. Should see mid-90s in Heber, about 94 degrees is forecast. So a little bit of moisture later this evening moving in from the southwest might generate partly cloudy conditions, but it'll be later tonight. Into tomorrow, we're looking at the heat continuing. In fact, across the Wasatch Front, even hotter temperatures than today for Park City, still expecting about 87 for the high. We should see temperatures start to slide. They'll moderate more into the weekend as some slightly cooler air moves in from the northwest. So we still have that small chance of an isolated shower or thunderstorm on Friday as well. That's as a storm system to the southwest of us actually lifts north through the state. Most of the shower potentials for the eastern and far southeastern portion, but we will likely see partly cloudy skies in Park City and in Heber, about a 10 to 20% chance of seeing an isolated shower or thunderstorm. So eyes to the skies Friday afternoon, will be 81 for the high. Overnight lows in the mid-50s into Saturday. Upper 70s are expected into the weekend. Should be a gorgeous weekend across the Wasatch back, with temperatures continuing to fall into next week into the upper 60s. It's looking like by Tuesday, so cooler air moving in from the northwest. Not much moisture with it. Could generate partly cloudy skies early next week, but the cooler temperatures, I think, will be a nice relief from the high heat we're seeing now. In Heber, we're in the 90s, as we mentioned today. Tomorrow, 93. Upper 80s with partly cloudy skies on Friday, a slight chance of a storm, and then sunshine over the weekend. Mid-80s for highs, falling into the mid to upper 70s Monday, Tuesday next week.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Nate.
You bet.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, we'll be checking in with High Family Collection co-founder Sarah Hutchinson, along with program director Kayla Cantor. They've got details on the organization's first fundraiser this weekend. Summit County Community Engagement Officer Derek Sitaway will be talking about emergency communications and notification systems ahead of fire season, which state officials expect will be a whopper this year. Latino Arts Festival manager Andrea Zavala and ArtFest Youth Program Coordinator Allison Martinez Orocho will have details about their festival this weekend. And finally, Jessica Turner with the Heber Valley Chamber has a look ahead at some of the events happening this summer in the Heber Valley. Then stay tuned for the Mountain Life this morning between 9 and 10. Organizational and sports psychologist Dr. Richard Davis explores the five key behaviors that lead people to make better decisions in both their personal and professional lives. Then scientist, author, and speaker Dr. Alan Townsend presents a moving perspective on the common ground between science and religion as he begins to see scientific inquiry as more than a source of answers to a given problem. Again, all of that coming up on The Mountain Life, heard right after the local news hour at 9. The High Family Collective is a network for parents to connect and to learn, and one of Summit County's newer nonprofit organizations. In the studio to tell us more about the High Family Collective is one of the co-founders, Sarah Hutchinson. On the phone, we have program director Kayla Cantor. Good morning, both of you ladies.
Good morning, Leslie. Thank you so much for having us.
And you
know, good morning.
And there's Kayla, too. Okay, well, Sarah, maybe just start with you and give us a little bit of background on the organization. You started it with a couple of girlfriends.
I sure did. It was the end of 2019. Joanna Kahn, Perry Hardy, and I got together in conversation and talked about the postpartum experience. And for anyone who has had a child or knows someone who's had a baby knows that it can be quite overwhelming. And we know that there are so many services in this town, and especially for babies and even pregnant mamas. But what was missing was something to support these mamas. And so we got together and decided to create the High Family Collective. It was very small and grassroots, and we decided to begin with weekly free programming of a coffee meetup and a monthly speaker series. We had two speaker series and then we shut down for the pandemic. And what could be more isolating than having a new baby and being masked up and alone? So we were on Zoom like everyone else, and we thought, shall we wait this out and start again, or shall we just keep it going? So we kept it going, and it was small and mighty. It always has been. And what has been so exciting is this year really feels like we have come alive. Hi Family Collective is very active in this perinatal period, this chapter, perinatal meaning both prenatal through the birth, through postpartum. And what I'm loving to see is these friendships that are being created, this support system, both in person, through our coffees, through our hikes, through our speaker series, as well as engaged in a WhatsApp thread that is hot topics and very, very active.
Well, this is kind of, so you're like celebrating 5 years.
I know, we're getting there. I mean, yes, and yet it feels kind of like we're still new. So, I mean, what is really coming forth is the importance of community and support and education. And that's what we started out with. Our mission is to educate, connect, and support families embarking this journey of parenting. And we are true to our mission. So we are able to give all of our programming away for free. We don't charge. And this is why we are coming together to raise some funds this weekend.
Before we talk a little bit about that, real quick, I mean, so how is the organization then funded? Because again, you're doing free programming. You've also got a pretty robust website.
We sure do. And we have a few employees, contractors like Kayla and our marketers. So we are really, really grateful for the generosity of our community. We have in the past raised money through Live PC, Give PC. And we also are funded by a few grants in town. We are very grateful to the Park City Community Foundation, to Promontory, also to the Sunrise Rotary Club. So through those grants, and again, through Live PC, Give PC, and a few private donors who have given us a substantial amount of money that goes a long way when all you're doing is getting people together in a park.
Okay, well, so this leads into the news that you are hosting your first fundraiser. Kayla, where and when is this happening?
Yeah, so our first ever family fundraiser is this upcoming Saturday, June 15th. It is at City Park, and it is 4 p.m. to bedtime. Bedtime meaning everyone should be in bed by 8. We are so excited about this fundraiser. We really wanted to do something special and try something new outside of just Live PC, Give PC. So we decided, why not put together a family fun, kid-friendly festival where we're having live music from Mountain Town Music and numerous bands. We're having food and beer for purchase from Auntie M's and Offset Beer and Pizza Underground, to lots of kids' games like Face Painters and Balloon Makers and Yard Games. And also very exciting, we have a large raffle that's going to be at the fundraiser. We've gotten so many amazing donations from people in the community, from things like Kita at the Pendry for a beautiful dinner, to local places in town like the Bow Collective to work out. We've just gotten so many amazing donations from businesses here to raffle off their services to families. And we're also hosting an online auction. And what's great about the auction is if you can't make the fundraiser, you can still access our online auction. And we have some pretty amazing things up there. We have an entire spa and ski getaway from Vail. We have a huge pizza oven from Gosney. We've got a big yoga bundle from PC Yoga Collective, plus so many more things. So there's a lot of opportunities for people in Park City to get involved either at the fundraiser or even just on their computer at home.
All right. So since it's a fundraiser, there is a cost?
Yes. It's a hopeful donation of $20 for a ticket, but a ticket is for an entire family and also includes a raffle ticket. So really, you know, it's basically for a family of four, you know, $5 or $4 per person.
All right. And people really don't need to bring anything other than maybe chairs and a blanket because they can eat and drink there. And that would help you raise money too.
Exactly. Everyone is welcome to bring their own picnic. We definitely would love everyone to at least bring their own water and a blanket. But otherwise, if you buy food at our festival, we're getting a cut from all of the food and beer vendors. So it would be amazing. But you're always welcome to bring your own food and definitely your own water bottle.
Okay. And it's not just limited to young families. Anybody that looking for something to do Saturday night can join you?
Yes, please do. The more, the merrier. We love to meet some new friendly faces.
All right. Any idea what you're hoping to raise?
You know, I would say between our raffle, our tickets, our auction, and our sponsorships, our goal is to raise $7,500. And, you know, we'll have to let you know if we meet that goal.
Okay. All right. Wanted to just give you an opportunity to talk about those programs. Certainly, Sarah mentioned them, but you're continuing on then with those live weekly coffees. When and where do you meet?
Yes. So the whole goal of our raising $7,500 is to continue to have all of our free programming. So we meet every Thursday at 10:30 at the Park City Library for our coffee. We also have a few times a month at kind of random dates. We have hikes for moms and babies. We have a monthly speaker series where someone related to the pregnancy or birth or postpartum world speaks. We also give meals from Auntie M to all new families and to any families just struggling through a hardship. And we have a free lactation group. We've been running for a while, but we've actually now partnered with Park City Hospital, who's going to be running it. And that's going to be a weekly occurrence too, which for any mom who has gone through the journey of breastfeeding, I'm sure they can tell you it can be very hard and very isolating. So we're so excited to have that. And you can find all more information and details about all these programs on our website, which is hivefamilycollective.com. And we're just so happy to be able to provide these free resources for moms.
All right. And as I mentioned, a robust website. Looks like you've got all of those Zoom recordings online on the website.
So. Yes. That was one of the bright spots of the pandemic is that we recorded our speaker series. And so it is a library of resources that I know from looking at the number of clicks and when people are watching them, that it is a library that has stayed alive. So there are speakers ranging from wellness, nutrition, exercise, you know, mental wellness, just so many amazing speakers around the community as well as around the country because we were able to reach out. I also am going to give a plug for our Instagram because that is really where there's a lot of updates and so many fun baby photos. If you like me and my kids are older, I get my baby fixed by looking at my clients' children. So Instagram is a great way to find us. Also, if you are interested in joining in on the conversation on WhatsApp, please reach out through Instagram is a great way and we can add you to that. We also have a prenatal WhatsApp. We have a Hive Family, which is all the umbrella, as well as a Rad Dads WhatsApp, because we know that the partners are not alone either. And so what has been really fun, we just had our first dads event, and it was a smashing hit. So we are really excited for people to come out to the park because a lot of people have met online. And so it's a way to put a name with a face. So I hope to see you out at City Park on Saturday, 4 p.m. to bedtime. And I'm so happy the weather sounds so nice. So thank you.
Okay. Well, good luck. That's Sarah Hutchinson and Kayla Cantor with the Hive Family Collective. Thanks for your time this morning. Even with above average snowfall for the last two winters, officials already worried that we could see more wildfires this summer. In the studio to tell us how Summit County is preparing residents to be informed about what to do in the event of a wildfire. I have Summit County Communication and Public Engagement Director Derek Sitaway. Good morning, Derek.
Good morning.
So state officials, as you may know, held a news conference Monday reporting that the fire conditions headed into this summer, similar to years like 2020 and 2012 when the state saw some devastating blazes. What do you know about the fire conditions in Summit County at this point?
Well, things are certainly still green around here, but as everyone knows, we've had some extra warm temperatures the last few days and today and through the weekend. And so we're just getting everyone prepared as we start to get hotter and to dry out to make sure that they're signed up to get alerts for us in any type of emergency situation, but especially as fire season is top of mind for us right now.
Yeah, and the problem, as explained on Monday, is that due to the two wet winters, we've got more grass, which, as we know, when it dries out, it basically becomes fuel for wildfires. Governor Cox calling it the perfect recipe for wildfire season. So what is Summit County doing to kind of prepare for fire season?
So a couple of things that we like to remind people every year about is our emergency alert system, and you can sign up for that. That's also known as Everbridge for people that may have heard it by that name, and that's at summitcountyalerts.org. And that's the way you'll be notified for any type of emergency situation, including an evacuation for a fire. So we want to make sure that residents have signed up for that. And if you have signed up for it in the past, it's important to go in, make sure you can still log in, make sure that your address and your cell phone and your information is up to date so that you are getting those alerts if you need to receive them.
So if you do that, I mean, what kind of alerts are you pushing out?
So Everbridge is for emergency situations only. So that would be anything that required a shelter in place or an evacuation, as an example. We also have what's called a Nixle channel, and that's for less imminent threatening information. And that's where we have our text line for Summit County Fire Info. So you can sign up for that at SC Fire Info, all one word, at 888-777. You just text that keyword to that, and that will give you information about current fire conditions, so red flag warnings. We've been putting information out the past few days about the Ponderosa prescribed burn in the Uintas, and then if we have any active fires, that will also keep you updated in a non-emergency situation to know what's going on with those fires, containment, acreage, things like that.
So you're going to see a lot more information on the Summit County Fire Info text, as you would. And then with the Everbridge, that also would be a text alert, but it would be done just area by area?
Yes, so Everbridge, it can be geofenced to a specific area, and that comes out in a variety of ways. You'll receive information. If you've signed up for text, you'll get text. They do reverse 911 calls through Everbridge to landlines or to cell phones as well. You also get the emergency IPAWS alerts through that as well if there's a situation when we would send those out. And then one other thing I wanted to mention while we're talking about the text line is our Spanish emergency alerts text line, and that's Summit Alerta, again, all one word. And you can sign up for that at 888-777 as well. And that's just the same information that we would send out to SC Fire Info, but also includes in wintertime storm warnings, road closures, things like that, all in Spanish for our Spanish-speaking community.
Okay, and that became obvious that we did not have that back on the Summit County Fire back in 2020. So you guys have worked hard to...
Yeah, we've since the Parley's Canyon fire, we worked closely with the sheriff's office and the emergency management groups in our community to make sure that we have great communications for all of our residents.
Yeah, so who do you have doing that translation for you?
We have a number of team members. The communication and public engagement team has two Spanish speakers that are on our staff. We're fortunate to be able to offer that, and then also working closely with those who speak Spanish in the sheriff's office. So it's a coordinated effort between us and the sheriff's office to make sure that regardless of if someone's on vacation or out, that we all have someone available during an emergency to make sure that we have that dual language capability for our notifications.
Okay, so everybody would receive the same information. It would come from you, basically your office, and then get translated and pushed out as well.
We have a process, and we've done some workshops and kind of tabletops just to work through how that translation process works to make sure it's seamless and the correct information is being translated. And the idea is that it goes out as close to possible at the same time as we can get that information out.
All right. Any idea how many residents have signed up for the services that you offer?
Everbridge, we have a pretty robust system because it's been in place for a number of years. SC Fire Info, I just looked the other day and I believe we have over 1,700 subscribers, and that's just for the text information. Summit Alerta, I would have to take a look to check on that again. So again, if you are signed up, check for your information, but if you're not or you're not sure, be sure to text those keywords to us or go to summitcountyalerts.org, and again, make sure you're signed up or that your information is current just as we get ready for a potential fire season ahead, right?
Yeah. I'm guessing, do you have any word on this in terms of expecting perhaps a ban on fireworks or campfires?
We don't have any information at that time right now. When we do, we'll make sure that everybody's well aware of it. That's kind of a coordinated effort between the fire warden, the state fire warden, and then at the county and city levels. So we'll make sure when we have that information out, that's something, again, that we would text out to that SC Fire Info line and also, of course, share on our website and all of our social media.
Yeah. And we also know, I mean, fires are, humans are usually the big cause of them. And as we saw back in Tollgate a few years ago, vehicles can also be kind of a fire starter. You know, of course, that the Parley's Canyon fire there near Summit Park in 2020 was started when a vehicle just pulled over. You know? So people, any other fire prevention tips that you think people ought to know about?
It's what we call, the statewide campaign is called Fire Sense, and it's just practicing the basics and keeping those in mind. So specifically talking about vehicles, it's making sure that your tow chains are wrapped up tight enough that they're not dragging and hitting on the ground, just making sure that your vehicle is maintained, and practicing extra caution if you do need to pull off the road. We realize that's an emergency situation, but if you cannot pull off into some tall grass, that's definitely a plus. And then also, again, if you have a campfire, just making sure that you're making it properly contained, it's in the appropriate fire pit. Making sure that your fire's out afterward. If, you know, when we do have fireworks and when fireworks are allowed, it's making sure that you're using them responsibly and taking care of where you're setting those off. So just all of the common sense things that it seems really small and trivial, but it's those sparks that can start fires that can potentially spread to hundreds or thousands of acres.
Okay. And then how are you getting word out then to our Spanish-speaking residents?
So again, that's through our Summit Alerta text line for kind of our emergency broadcasting information. We're also working, we collaborated with the health department and just received a rural and health equity grant. And so we're working with that or with them over the next 2 months to really build out more of a robust communication system for our Spanish-speaking residents. We're looking at probably a WhatsApp line for that. There's a lot of pieces to plug in just to make sure we get it set up correctly and so that it can be used as a way that we can broadcast information, but also that we can hear back from residents that have questions. So that's something over the summer that we're focusing on getting up and running with these grant funds, and that we're excited to be able to offer that to the community.
Great, and we'd love to push it out with our new kpcw.org in Espanol.
Of course.
Okay, anything else you want to mention, Derek?
Nope, just again to go to summitcountyalerts.org to sign up, and then anything Summit County you're looking for engagement information, you can go to summitcounty.org/engage to find out all of our upcoming events.
All right. Derek Sitaway is Summit County's Communication and Public Engagement Director. Thanks so much for your time.
Yep.
Well, the neighborhood above Rockport Reservoir doesn't have enough water right now. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that after a failed well drilling, residents are now looking for solutions.
Since 2010, a well has supported Lake Rockport Estates with between 70 and 90 gallons per minute, or GPM. But in 2020, Utah's driest year on record, the well slowed to just 23 gallons per minute, a problem compounded by an influx of full-time COVID-19 residents in a place that was designed as a seasonal summer retreat.
And so that perfect storm of water usage and water shortage really just meant that there wasn't enough water for the community residents who already live up here.
That's Property Owners Association board member Skylar Kirshner. Lake Rockport Estates got a $3.65 million loan from the U.S. Department of Agriculture that year to drill a new well. consultants thought a 1,400-foot shaft could generate 100 gallons per minute, but in February, the completed well was only pumping 21. After spending over $1 million to site and drill it, Kirshner says the neighborhood didn't want to spend more to connect it to the water system. He says under state regulations, a total of 150 gallons per minute is needed to serve the community.
If we're being generous with the existing well that we have and say that it's producing 90 gallons a minute, the 21 gallon per minute figure doesn't get us to what we need, even for today's requirements.
Today, Lake Rockport Estates has 178 water hookups, but it has 328 lots in total, which will double the water needed at full build-out. One possible solution is annexing into Mountain Regional Water's Special Service District, a public water company set up by Summit County. Here's Mountain Regional's general manager, Andy Garland.
Mountain Regional was founded as to help out failing water companies, so it kind of fits the pattern of what we've done in the past. However, this would be our first venture into eastern Summit County.
Promontory is the easternmost community Mountain Regional services. Reaching Lake Rockport on the other side of the mountain would require an estimated 3,000 feet of pipe. That's according to a county staff report. And there's another wrinkle, says County Manager Shane Scott.
It was never intended to be a year-round community when it was first established. The way that the infrastructure was put in was not done to a municipal standard.
When the neighborhood was built in the 1970s, pipes weren't built below frost depth. Residents have been trucking in water during the winter when pipes freeze. So establishing regular water service from Mountain Regional would mean winterizing the neighborhood's whole water system. Garland ballparks the entire project, connecting to Mountain Regional and winterizing that system at around $20 million. Who would pay for what is an open question, and the county wants 100% of Lake Rockport property owners to vote in favor of annexation. Otherwise, the process could be protested at every step of the way. A preliminary discussion is scheduled at the Summit County Council Wednesday at 2:50 p.m. If county elected or water officials don't think connecting Mountain Regional and Lake Rockport makes sense, Kirshner says they may need to drill another well or contract with some other producer. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
This weekend, it's the annual Park City Latino Arts Festival. In the studio with details, I have Festival Manager Andrea Zavala and Youth Program Coordinator and Poet Allison Martinez Orocho. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Andrea, let's start with you and maybe just kind of give us when, where, how much.
It's this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday, it'll start from 4 to 9, Saturday from 10 to 9, and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. It's totally free. You don't have to pay anything. Free parking, free entrance, everything. Unless you want to eat and drink, of course, we're going to have a bar for margaritas. We have more than 30 artists from different countries, Argentina, Chile, Peru, Mexico, Ecuador. We have more than 16 performances between folklore dancing and live music. We are also going to have free face painting Saturday and Sunday. Kimball Arts Center is with us on Friday. We have our nonprofits, the Park City Library will be with us, Summit Community Gardens. We have more than 9 food vendors, Boa Vida Sai, their local Tina's Bakery. We have Brasa Grill coming, Peruvian coffee, Peruvian food. So it's going to be a lot of things happening. Very excited.
Okay. It's going to be at the Canyons Village.
Take
the cabriolet.
You can park and take the cabriolet that it's free.
All right. So why do we do this?
We do this because it integrates people. It keeps us together. We get to know each other. It is fun. I don't think anybody's against some fun. And that's important. It brings a lot of smiles, the colors, the folklore, getting to know each culture. I always said, even though we're all Latino, we're still, there is diversity in that world.
Yeah, and where will we kind of see some of those differences? In the artwork, and the music, food?
In the food, in everything, the language. You know, Brazil speaks Portuguese. The rest of South America and Central America speaks Spanish. And that Spanish, it's different. Chileans speak different from Ecuadorian and Argentinians. And so even between us, we still need to get to know each other.
Yeah. Give us an idea of some of the artists that we'll see.
We're going to have, this year, we have artists working with wood. We have artists working with rock. We have painting artists. We have digital artists. We have poetry. We have the performances.
And where did you find all these folks?
I go out and look for them. Well, for the visual artists, we put out a call, and so they apply. And then for everything else, the performances, the food vendors, the face painting, I go out and look for them and try their food and make sure it's authentic, that they can be at the festival. The same for the music, the performances. It's always changing. We have some coming back, but then we also have new ones.
All right. And then, Allison, as I introduced you, you are a poet. Will you be performing?
Actually, well, yeah. The Artes de Mexico in Utah organization, they put out a competition every year called the Sor Juana Poetry Contest. And all the winners are going to be reciting poetry. And I was lucky enough to win third place in that competition last year.
Lucky, no, skilled.
Yeah, thank you.
So what's the poem about?
Well, actually, the poem is about allyship. It's a poem that expresses some frustrations and some neutral observations about allyship and how it appears even in allied spaces.
All right. And so any idea what time you'll be presenting?
I think it will be around noon on Sunday.
On Saturday. You're on Saturday.
Yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm. And wow. Ali is also our youth program director. We did a youth program this year. It was something new for the Latino Arts Fest, and she did Vejigante masks in different schools, and we're going to have a exhibit.
So tell us about those. It's kind of a Puerto Rican culture?
Yeah, so I am a visual artist as well from Puerto Rico, and I've been practicing here for 5 years. My work is centered on Puerto Rican culture, specifically the character of the Vejigante. And so I was hired by the Arts Council to teach local Park City students about Vejigantes and Puerto Rican folk art. And so what we did was we created this program in partnerships with four schools in Park City, and we visited the classrooms to create cardboard Vejigante masks. And the big result of this effort is that we will be exhibiting 132 masks from students in Park City at the festival. And we're going to be at the pavilion tent. We're going to be there all 3 days. It's going to be open to the public. So it'll be a beautiful, colorful display of the artwork of our local student artists.
So the Vejigante means folk art? Is that what that encompasses that? Or is it just the masks itself?
Thank you for asking. So the Vejigante character, it's a folkloric character from Puerto Rico, and it actually embodies the spirit of Puerto Ricans, where they're always trying to find joy and fun no matter the circumstance. So they've become symbols of joyful resistance. They're really old and have like a deep historical origin, but we have reappropriated it, and it now is this a beautiful symbol of joy.
Okay, and those masks will be up then all weekend.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay.
All right, and I know you rolled through the food vendors, but maybe slow down just a little bit and tell us who's going to be there.
Tina's Bakery, they're local with their empanadas and their sweets. We have Boa Vida Acai, Brazilian acai with fruit and granola food truck. We have Brasa Grill, Brazilian meats, and appetizers from Brazil, like pão de queijo, coxinhas, quibes, pastel, different Brazilian staples. We also have Peruvian food truck, Peruvian coffee, tacos, Don Rafa. If you've been on State Street, the food truck from, he was the first food truck, taco food truck on the State Street, and he's gonna join us for the festival. Uh-huh. And then we also have choripanes and churros.
Sounds good. Okay. So how are you guys getting the word out then to our local Latino
population? Our local
population?
Latino population. We've been here at KPCW doing different things. We've been on TV. We've been on NBC, Fox 13. I was on Univision yesterday. We're talking to everybody. a lot of people know about the festival already. They're very, very excited because it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Now, the Arts Council is taking over the Latino Arts Festival mm-hmm. from Christian's Art. So you two are working for the Arts Council.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So last year was our first year as a solo Arts Council taking the production totally entire just us. And we decided to do the festival, 3-day festival. And this is our second edition of doing a 3-day festival. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else you want people to know?
Just come prepare for the fun. It's going to be, we're going to have nice weather. It's probably going to be hot, so wear sunscreen, hat, water. You can refill it there. Layers, you know, because if a cloud comes in, it might get a little chilly. What else? Hats. And prepare to be there the whole day, because everything's different and we have entertainment back to back.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much for coming in, Andrea.
Thank you, Leslie. Thanks.
A reminder that Park City Museum is hosting a lecture this evening called Closing the Silver King Coalition Mineshaft. It'll be given by Brian Buck and Davy Jones this evening, 5 to 6 p.m. It's held at the Park City Museum Education and Collection Center located at 2079 Sidewinder Drive. This closing was an important step in the long-term preservation plans for the mine building. The presentation by Brian and Davey will discuss the work that was accomplished to close the mine shaft. More information on the talk and the presenters can be found online at parkcityhistory.org. And save the date, the newcomers of Greater Park City will be hosting their annual coffee and speaker social. This is happening July 12th. Terry Moffitt, one of the principal writers for The Follies, will share stories of what goes into making this must-see sold-out event every year. Everyone's welcome. It's, again, happening July 9th, 9:30 to 11 at the Park City Community Church. If you need more information, it's parkcitynewcomers.org. Also coming up today, a reminder that it's the annual cleanup of the Park City Cemetery. All flowers, wreaths, decorations must be removed by the graves today. Any items that are left will be disposed by staff during today's cleanup. Well, school is out, and though it's not officially summer, there are lots of warm weather activities on the horizon in the Heber Valley. On the phone with a rundown of some of the noteworthy events, I have Jessica Turner. She is Heber Valley Chamber's Public Relations Manager. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's start with the Heber Market. I think this opened, just a week or two ago?
It opened last Thursday, and it had a huge turnout, which is a good sign for our summer visitation, for residents and visitors, actually. It'll be every Thursday night at the Heber City Market, Heber City Public Park on Main Street, and it goes from 5 to 9. Music starts around 6:30. We've got local vendors, food trucks. Bring your own chair, bring your own blanket, leave the pups at home, please. but bring family and friends. It is just a really delightful community experience and market, and it'll happen every Thursday night this summer.
Okay, so does it become kind of a farmer's market when we start getting the produce and stuff, or is it more just
great question
things?
yeah so you know, it's more of your local vendors, food trucks, live music, games and fun in the park. The farmer's market is more focused on Saturdays in Midway, and that started last Saturday as well. That'll run every Saturday from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. at Midway, historic Midway Town Square. Excellent opportunity to pick up local produce, support a bunch of local farmers and growers, as well as some local food purveyors and a few artisans as well. So soaps and lotions and things of that nature are also offered at that Midway Farmers Market. And that will run through October. Again, every Saturday at Midway Town Square from 10 to 2.
All right. And something that people may not know about, the Ritual Chocolate Tour and Tasting Experience.
Yes. Yeah. So they started this about a month or two ago. It's every Friday at 11 a.m. It's a short tour with a small tasting experience. It really gives people, pun intended, a taste of the whole chocolate bean to bar experience that Ritual Chocolate has built their brand around. They do encourage people to RSVP just so they can make sure they have enough staff to lead those guided tours. But if you're looking for an introduction to Ritual Chocolate and what they're about, this is a great way of doing it. So they do offer that every Friday at 11 a.m. at their Charleston location on the south end of Heber Valley, right off Highway 189.
Okay, and this happens pretty much over Labor or Father's Day weekend. It looks like they're doing it a week later. This is the R.W. Erickson Antique Power Show that happens at the end of the road in Wallsburg. Tell me about that.
Yeah, this is an annual event that the R.W. Erickson Foundation opens up the private Erickson property, which is hundreds of acres out in the Wallsburg area. A lot of it's farmland, but they have something over like 20 huge shop buildings that are dedicated to preserving antiques. Everything from cars and farm equipment and tractors to trucks. They have a whole shop dedicated to bicycles and motorcycles. I had the opportunity of going to this last year and walking through some of these buildings. When I say an extensive collection, I mean it wholeheartedly. They really take a lot of pride in the way that they've preserved the history and of some of these developments in the mechanical aspects of it. They've got signage up that talks about how the different vehicles adapted over time, how the motorcycles adapted over time. It's the most comprehensive collection that I've ever been to. And they only open up their buildings a couple of times a year. Otherwise, the property remains private and by appointment only. So the annual Antique Power Show happening June 21st through the 23rd. It is a ticketed event. It's a nominal fee. They don't charge a bunch because they are a nonprofit, but just enough to keep staff on hand to help facilitate the tours and provide information. Phenomenal experience. If you haven't been, I can't rave about it enough. It's just an excellent opportunity to come out and see some of these antiques that you wouldn't normally get the opportunity to see.
It's just really incredible, but that one person collected all of this stuff.
Right, and the family continues that in that person's honor, which is really great as well. So the whole family is really involved in the property and in the maintenance and continuing to offer this as a community event.
Yeah, and then they'll offer it again later this summer, I know, during the Wasatch Music Festival.
Correct, yeah. Yes, correct, which will be happening in July or August this year, but it's on our events calendar. Yeah, okay. That music festival is.
All right, tell me about the Wasatch Plein Air Paradise.
Well, this is something we really love. It taps very deeply into the arts and culture in our community and along the Wasatch Back. It's an annual event. The painting, it's a painting event. The painting competition itself runs June 22nd through July 6th. So if you do drive through, if you're a local or a visitor to the Heber Valley and you're driving through the community and you see an artist, an easel set up at any location throughout Heber Valley, they're most likely participating in the Plein Air Paradise event, which means they're out, they're looking at the natural landscapes, the seasonal florals that are out and capturing those on canvas. It's a beautiful experience. If you're into arts or supporting local artists, the art exhibit portion of the event happens July 1st through 6th. Artists will still be actively painting and out in the community creating their unique and individual art pieces. And then you can actually go to the Midway Town Square and look at those art pieces and purchase them if you find something that resonates with you. So really fun event. It, of course, covers over the July 4th week, which we've got a whole big festival happening July 4th with a 10K, et cetera. So if you wanted to make an even bigger, experience out of it, you could come out, you could stay a night or two, or even just come up for a day trip, do the Plein Air Paradise on any of those dates around July 4th, and come back for the Small Town Red, White, and Blue Festival and Main to Main 10K and 5K races happening on the actual date of Independence Day, July 4th.
Okay, and it's good to see Heber City actually kind of putting that together, a more vibrant Independence Day celebration, so people can just stay at home.
Right, and the thinking behind that was, this will be, I believe, the third year for the Red, White, and Blue Festival and the fourth or fifth year for the Main to Main race. We pulled those events together to really have a bigger bang, so to speak, on July 4th. And the thought being, we lost a lot of our residents and community members going to other communities on July 4th because there wasn't a formal celebration happening here in Heber Valley. So the collective force, if you will, between the Heber Valley Chamber and Tourism Office, Heber City, Midway City, and the Community Alliance for Main Street collectively got together, as well as several other partners and sponsors. I don't want to say it's just those groups. It's certainly a bigger collaborative effort, and decided that we needed to have a small town celebration that kept people in the valley and offered something safe, family friendly, and a full day of festivities to really celebrate that July 4th holiday as it needs to be.
Okay. Also, you wanted to mention that you've got coming up at the end of the month the Back to 50s Car Show.
Yes. Yep. This is another annual event. It's very popular. It brings hundreds of people. It happens at the Heber City Main Street Park. This year, it will be the last Saturday in June, so that's the June 29th. It goes from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., and it is free. People love free, so it is free. Food trucks will be in the area, as well as local restaurants if you want to come up and make a full day of it. But the entire park will be overtaken by all sorts of vehicles, not just from the 50s era, although that is the primary focus. So it is an antique car show. We love it. We love when they come to the community. Encourage everybody to come up and experience that on June 29th.
All right. And then just kind of a save the date. That doesn't happen until early August, but you've got what, registration open for the annual golf tournament?
We do. Yeah, that's the Heber Valley Chamber Golf Tournament. It will be happening at the Homestead Golf Club this year, so the Homestead Property Golf Resort. We just wanted to mention this because the golf tournament fills very quickly and we are obviously limited at total number of participants and teams. So if there is anyone out there listening that wants to participate in this annual tournament, it is one of the most fun golf tournaments in the northern part of the state. We love hosting this event. We love the people that participate. Lots of prizes and giveaways and games and a great lunch, fully catered with lunch. Shotguns start at 8 a.m. And that is on August 6th. So just, again, save the date and RSVP register if you're interested in participating.
All right. And then also coming up this month, you've got the Chamber Luncheon, After Hours Mixer. Tell us about those.
Correct. Yeah. So monthly Chamber Luncheon happens next Tuesday at the UVU Wasatch campus. It will be focused on what's happening in Wasatch. We will have members from Heber City, Midway City, Wasatch County chatting with us about what's happening now, what's on the horizon, what residents and local businesses along the Wasatch Back need to be aware of. A really great opportunity to mix and mingle and network both before, during, and after those luncheons. And that happens at noon on Tuesday, June 18th. The mixer is the following week on June 25th. That one is a free event. The luncheon is a small fee just to cover the actual cost of the lunch itself. The mixer is free, happening June 25th from 4 to 6 p.m. Excellent opportunity to come out, bring your business cards, bring your, prep your elevator pitch, if you will, and mix and mingle with other community members and business owners. And this month, it'll actually be held at UVU Wasatch campus because MTech, the Mountainland Technical College, is hosting for the month of June.
Great. All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
There's so much happening. Summer is definitely kicked off here in Heber Valley. So whether you're looking to connect with businesses or just come out and have a great time experiencing some of the events and festivities of the Valley, check our events calendar at gohebervalley.com. It's all there.
Okay, Jessica, thanks for your time this morning.
Yeah, thank you. Okay.
Jessica Turner, again, is the Heber Valley Chamber Public Relations Manager. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Taking a look at some local news now, a landowner is ending their efforts to block a new Deer Valley chairlift. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more on that.
On Monday, Bransford Land Company told the Park City Planning Department it's withdrawing its appeal of Deer Valley's new six-pack bubble lift on Park Peak. In an email to the department, company chairman Ann Bransford said her company respects the efforts of city staff and the Planning Commission, but cited no reason for the withdrawal. Bransford did not immediately respond to a request for comment from KPCW Tuesday. In a statement, Deer Valley Resort didn't comment on Bransford's move to withdraw the appeal, but said the project is a crucial part of its expansion efforts, which involves adding 9 new lifts by winter 2025-26. Bransford filed an appeal in an attempt to block the resort's project, which was approved by the Planning Commission unanimously. The Bransford family owns land that Deer Valley leases for the Trump and Ontario runs. The Park Peak Lift project also involves grading more than 4 miles of new ski trails, one of which runs directly along the Bransford property line. In a letter submitted to the Planning Commission in April, Ann Bransford criticized the lift's alignment and wrote that the proposed primary beginner trail is too narrow. She suggested Deer Valley use Bransford land to widen the run. Deer Valley Vice President of Mountain Operations Steve Graff previously said the resort chose its plan because it's within its existing lease and was identified by their consultant SE Group as one of the best alignments. Deer Valley President and COO Todd Bennett also suggested the resort didn't want to work with Bransford due to active litigation. The Bransford Land Company is being sued by Mayflower LLC over right-of-way access. During the May 22nd Planning Commission meeting when the Deer Valley lift was approved, Ann Bransford claimed the land in question was not part of the lawsuit. A hearing is scheduled for June 18th. Mayflower LLC is a subsidiary of Extel Development, which is constructing the new Deer Valley East Village base along US 40 in Wasatch County. According to a timeline provided by Bransford in appeal documents, Extel offered the family $2 million for 40 acres of their land in 2017, but it was declined. Deer Valley plans to begin construction work later this year after securing a building permit, but lift towers won't be installed until summer 2025. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, the Military Installation Development Authority, known as MIDA, is moving to add another project area in Utah soon, with sites across the state. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has details.
The new project area, if approved, will be created to serve the Utah Army National Guard. At a MIDA board meeting Tuesday, Deputy Director Ariana Farber said the new project will be mostly made up of existing National Guard properties all over Utah.
You will look at 26 non-contiguous properties, which will comprise the next project area.
It will also include the Camp Williams Training Center in Bluffdale and land owned by the City of Tooele.
When they caught wind of the project area, they were very excited, very supportive, and wanted to contribute a parcel as well.
Farber said the new project will be similar to the existing Falcon Hill project area. MIDA will develop properties for commercial purposes to generate revenue that will pay for infrastructure and other projects. Plans are still in the works, but Farber said MIDA and Army National Guard staff are creating a list of priorities to work towards. That could include an improved entrance to Camp Williams, a new aircraft hangar in Cedar City, a readiness center in Tooele, and more. More details will be presented at the next MIDA board meeting, tentatively scheduled for August 6th. MIDA, a quasi-governmental organization, was created in 2007 to promote military initiatives and support development projects. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And MIDA, of course, the agency made up of appointed and not elected state officials responsible for much of that development in Wasatch County as part of the Mayflower East Village project. Of the 7 hotels planned and the thousands of hotel rooms there, only 100 are specifically reserved for military members.